I love the colorful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. On the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up her vibration. She's giving me the excitation. I'm backing up.
Well, hello, this is Solazar, and welcome to Good Vibrations Radio, Tools for Transformation. Now, quantum physics tells us that we are all energy vibrating at different frequencies. And in Good Vibrations Radio, we bring you information that allows you to change the vibrational frequency of your life. We are your source for everyday alchemy, so you can take the lead in your life and turn it into gold. Good Vibrations Radio is made possible through the sponsorship of Magic for Life, which is also the promoter producer of the Rota Psychic Fair coming back to the Monterey Fairgrounds October 21st and 22nd. It's the weekend before Halloween, so we get an early jump on Halloween because that's the time when the veils between the worlds are thinnest, and that means one thing and one thing only. It's time to have some fun. So go ahead and take a look at rotapsychicfair.com. If you're not on the email list, get on it. And also, that way you'll be notified of our upcoming quarterly preview in September. Well, here we are. It's the end of July. Now, as we've talked about earlier on the show, July is the first month of the manifestation cycle of the year. So we are into producing those intentions we laid out there. Unfortunately, for most of us, we haven't paid attention to our intentions those first 6 months. So when things start cropping up, we say, where did that come from? There's only one answer. It came from you. So let's take a look, as you know, from Day by Day with James Allen, which I love to share. James Allen wrote his book, As a Man Thinketh, in 1903, taking the title from chapter 23, verse 7 of Proverbs, which says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. James wanted us to know that our present reality is a direct outcome of our past thoughts and actions. Whether we agree with it or not, it's there for us and it's there to teach us. However, we're not predestined to live that as our future. We get to change that reality every day by creating new thoughts, new intentions, and new directions to create a new future. In Day by Day with James Allen, his words have been carved up into a little segment for each day of the month. And for the 31st day of the month, it says, the magic is in you. Boy, I love that because I know somebody whose business says the magic is in you. So the magic is in you when he realizes that he is a creative power and that he may command the hidden soil and seeds of his being out of which circumstances grow, he then becomes the rightful master of himself. What he's saying is plant your own seeds, till your own ground, water that soil, fertilize, that soil, and come forward as the sprout, as the plant, as the flower that you truly are. When he realizes that he is a creative power and that he may command the hidden soil and seeds of his being out of which circumstances grow, he then becomes the rightful master of himself. That takes us away from that blame game of what was done to me, what was said to me, what happened to me, versus, as Buddha says, take responsibility. It's all mine, and I own it all. Now, I mentioned several times that there are several things I do every day. One of them is I start my day and end my day with forgiveness prayers for both myself and others. I also start and end my day with gratitude. I also start and end my day by reading the daily word, because the daily word gives us a little snippet that we can hold on to for that day as an idea to reframe some of that negative thinking that automatically comes to us. And for today, the daily word says, I find inspiration in all things. So if you know that the magic is in you, And if you know that you find inspiration in all things, you can reframe anything that presents itself to you to say, what can I learn? What can I do? What action can I take? That doesn't mean bad things don't happen. It just means we don't have to live in the cauldron of the bad things. And I'm going to shift the way I usually do things just a little bit to touch on some of the astrology for this week before going to our guests today, because we want to spend as much time as possible with them. So I'm going to touch on a couple of things very quickly. Most notably is Wednesday's Uranus retrograde, and that's going to be important for us. Now, we came off, actually today we have one thing, we have Venus going into Cancer. That's very good because that's our planet of love, harmony, and balance. It's entering the sign of family and home. You might be tidying up your house right now, going out in your garden. As long as you're listening, it's good. And keeping the family peace. It's also a good time to really think about what family means to you, because it may not be traditional in the traditional sense. On Wednesday, Uranus goes retrograde in Aries. And as we know, a retrograde is always about that internal examination inside of us. But Uranus going retrograde causes you to look at what changes you've recently made or ones you've been putting in place. Uranus is going to want those changes to be new and exciting and different. If you're not doing anything like that, Uranus is going to give you a little bonus there on Wednesday and start putting things in place to say, you need to examine these areas of your life. Now, this isn't a bad retrograde, but it's going to be one that's going to cause us to really re-examine how we can shift what's not working in our life. So often we become accustomed to falling into a pattern or routine and we stay there. We don't move out of it. Uranus is going to come along and say, hey, I'm going to shake things up a little bit. Are you ready? It's also helpful if you've been shaking those things up on your own anyway. On Thursday, we're going to have Jupiter and Libra going to have a square with Pluto and Capricorn. And that, as we know, is a fight. But Jupiter's our most beneficent planet in the universe. And when it fights, it's really little more than a hand slap. The only thing is it's fighting Pluto, who loves to create transformation all around us. So Pluto's looking for that transformation. You're likely to find yourself wanting to expand some area of your life, which works nicely with the Uranus retrograde going on. Now, it won't be so traumatic or dramatic unless you prefer to create drama, because Jupiter's giving you the confidence to do things here. And Pluto's going to say, and I want you to do new things. But because of that confidence, you just want to ensure you don't get overconfident and step into other people's pots, go stepping on their toes, crossing boundaries. Be very gentle with what you're doing. A little humility will go a long way with this transit. And it's going to start hitting you already. Excuse me. It's going to start hitting you already tomorrow. So allow yourself to go gentle into this and not full bore. It's not the time to just take the sledgehammer to someone else's walls and say you can build a better wall. Next week, we're going to hit that lunar eclipse and full moon in Aquarius. And I'll certainly be talking about that next week. It's going to hit us at 11 a.m. Pacific time on Monday. And with that transit and with that lunar eclipse, we've got a lot going on going into the rest of August. But I'm going to touch that in more detail next week, so we can get really to the heart of why we're here today. We have two guests, Linda Starwolf and Nita Gage. Now, Linda Starwolf, or Starwolf, is the founding director and president of Venus Rising Association for Transformation, and the founder and president of Venus Rising University for Shamanic Psycho-Spiritual Studies in the state of Asheville, North Carolina, and Marin County in California. Now, she teaches and leads regular retreats at Open Center New York, Omega Institute, Hollyhock, and Sedona Mago Retreat. She also leads retreats to sacred sites, working with local shaman and indigenous healers in Mexico, Peru, and Egypt. Nita Gage has a doctorate in shamanic psycho-spiritual psychology and a master's degree in clinical psychology. She's a master shamanic breathwork practitioner and a visiting faculty for Venus Rising Association for Transformation. She's a teacher with the Hoffman Institute in California, a co-founder of the Neuroimaginal Institute. I should have practiced that three times before the show. And the creator of the Healer Within Retreats for medical professionals. And she lives in Mare Island in California. Now, both have authored other books, but today they're here to talk with us about their book, Soul Whispering, The Art of Awakening Shamanic Consciousness. Ladies, welcome to Good Vibrations Radio.
Thank you.
There you both are. So I have to start off by asking, what led the two of you to come together to write Soul Whispering?
The short version is we've been working together and dear friends for 20-something years and had talked about writing a book together and have shared so much with our work and our ways of working with people. And the time came where we were just deeply inspired. That's a really short version. Starwolf, you add something to that if you'd like to.
Yeah, we had been talking about doing a book together for many, many years. And my husband, who actually passed away 3 years ago, August 2nd, he was a big fan of Nita's as well as mine. And the three of us frequently worked together and taught workshops and led retreats together. And then we moved from California to North Carolina, where we set up a retreat center here. And Nita still lives in California, and we go back and forth. But she was visiting during his decline as he was ill. And he just loved her so much and loved me so much. And he believed in both of us and the work we were doing so much in the world, that he heard us talking in the other room. I was taking a little break from doing some care for him. And he heard us talking in the other room and talking about shamanic consciousness and the soul whispers within us. And he just said, you know, you guys need to write this book. And I'm like, no, now's not a good time, Brad. And he says, no, you need to write this book now. So the truth of the matter is that my beloved late husband, who was the beloved to both of us, was the inspiration, because, and we dedicate the book to him, to Brad Collins, in the front of the book as the one who inspired us, because I think he knew that we needed to do this, and he wanted us to have this connection, especially as he was passing. And so after his passing, we spent the next 2 years writing this book and really doing, I did a lot of healing in the writing of this book with Nita. So I think Brad has to get the credit for it.
I agree.
All right. So in Soul Whispering, you refer to a shamanic world. And I appreciated also that you pointed out that probably even 10 years ago, just bringing up the term shaman would have probably caused some people to cross their eyes. But shamanic practice and actions are much more accepted in today's world. What is a shamanic world for the listeners, and what would you like them to understand about that as a foundation for Soul Whispering?
Well, for me, this is Starwood. For me, the shamanic world is really the natural world. I like to say that it's our birthright, Solaris. It is a mystical tradition, of course, and most people associate it with indigenous people and, ancient wisdom, which is certainly true. But for our times now, where we are now, when there's really truly only, I don't even know, but only truly a handful of traditional elders left in the world, even the so-called elders now that are stepping forward from the indigenous world, you know, have their cell phones, you know, and their Facebook pages. So, the time of the traditional elders, there's not that many of them left. And Nita and I've had a blessed opportunity to study with some throughout the years. But the shamanic world now is something that I believe that all of humanity has the opportunity, and I believe the responsibility to embrace, and that shamanic world is accepting that we are part of the natural world. We're part of nature rather than keeping separate or apart from it. So part of the acceptance that we are elemental beings of water, earth, fire, and air, animated by the great mystery and great spirit, accepting that helps us find our role or our part, such as the trees and the green nation and the animal kingdom and the mineral kingdom have all found their right relationship in the shamanic world of sustainability, and that it's our time. It's our opportunity as the new kids on the block, as human beings, it's our opportunity to acknowledge our connection to our shamanic roots, that it's our birthright.
And as you mentioned about the show, I'm sorry, and Nita, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
No, that was good. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, in the terms of you mentioned that the elders, of course, you know, the true traditional elders are passing on and passing over, and they're certainly leaving works and studies and people behind. But can the average person be a shaman in their world? Because I thought that was really part of the direction of Soul Whispering, was for us to find ways to live in congruence with our world.
Well, I will jump in now. This is Nita. And yes, we do believe that is probably the basic tenet of the book, is that shamanic nature is in all of us. And what we're finding now, well, as you mentioned, I've done a lot of work in the medical profession, and holistic doctors in the Western world are really looking to indigenous healers to regain that wisdom and that connection, and the connection to the earth, and learning that, you know, I like to say that shamanic consciousness is primary care, that when we reconnect to our inner wisdom, that is, by definition, in the shamanic world, connected to nature, we can take care of ourselves. And this is what they're finding out in Western medicine, is that while Western medicine is phenomenal at acute care, they're not so great at chronic care. And the recognition among many of them is that we need to get back to self-care and from a holistic perspective that's connected. I mean, doctors are out there writing prescriptions for walking barefoot on the grass. You know, some of the good ones are doing that instead of Prozac. So it is in all of us. And the other thing I'd say about that, Mayor Starwolf mentioned that we both studied with shamanic teachers. And one of the things that I heard from indigenous teachers is that all of us have shamanic nature. We all are tribal by nature. We're all indigenous by nature. It's in us. In fact, what science is finding, what neuroscience is finding, is we're hardwired for exactly what shamans do, for working with the imaginal world, for using visions, for using prayer and chanting and song and dance to connect and transform.
Oh. You know, I'm sorry, you touch on also the characteristics of a shaman, and you just now mentioned, Nita, the imaginal world. So I'd like to make kind of a leap into a different area, that recently I was going through some other work that was talking about whenever there are challenges or problems or traumas in our life. Now, one of the things that modern society has lost is the understanding for the use of ceremony as a way for healing and guiding and to guide our way forward. And what I found interesting when you were talking about the imaginal world, it was, in my opinion, also stating is that create a vision, create a direction, and then surround yourself with things to help guide you in that. It's almost the idea for me of, you know, create your own little altar, your own little sacred path, your own little vision board to help carry you through your traumas. And with that be an accurate way of talking about creating an imaginal path or imaginal direction.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. And that, again, that's what science is showing us, that we can do that, that we can create visions and live into them. And it's not so much, it's not that simple New Age the years ago, the New Age talk of, you know, just think positive thoughts and it'll happen. You described it much better, which is create the vision and then surround yourself. And one of the ways you surround yourself is to go out into nature and find messages from the nature spirits and just taking that medicine walk that the indigenous people talk about and looking for signs. Or you can look for signs and clues in making a collage and a vision board. Yeah, beautifully said, Salazar.
Well, thank you.
What do you have to add to that, Star?
what's coming to me, and Nita has done a great job of expressing that, is my understanding of the word indigenous, who I actually studied with Grandmother Twyla of the Wolf Clan Nation, of the Seneca Wolf Clan. She was 94 years young when she passed to the other side in 2007. And when I said to her, like, Grandma, you know, when I'm here on the reservation, I don't know, you know, how I'm accepted here or whatever. And I said, you know, I'm not indigenous. And she said, oh, you know, basically hogwash. She says, indigenous, you really understand what indigenous means? And I said, well, I thought I did. It then means native. And she said, it means native to the earth. And all beings are native to the earth. It means being supported or rising up, belonging to the earth. And although we have our, perhaps like many of the tribal peoples believe, and I happen to believe as well, is that we have our original origins, or even as Carl Sagan said, in the stardust, in the stars, but we have risen up from this earth, even if we came from the stars. And as we rise up from this earth, we are now native to it. And so we find our place with it, and we begin to understand how to walk upon the earth and how to use both the energies of, as the indigenous people would say, of the great star nations, as well as the energies of the earth, of fire, water, earth, and air. And out of the imagination is born our imaginal selves. So I'm not sure if you've heard of those, Solaris, but scientists have coined a phrase a few years back in their studies called imaginal cells, C-E-L-L-S. And those imaginal cells are the very cells that are in the imagination, and they don't necessarily exist in the physical form of anything, but more in the energy field around something. So some people might call it the aura. So for instance, with a caterpillar, the caterpillar, as it's dissolving, must imagine itself as this reborn creature that's going to come out of this cocoon and have wings and be able to fly to South America for a vacation, you know? So it's quite a leap of faith as it's there and its eyeballs are falling out and it's turning into caterpillar mush. But they couldn't find the cells actually in the physical body of the caterpillar. So they came to the conclusion that these cells exist in the etheric field or the non-local field around the caterpillar itself. And then they went on to surmise that if its location is in the field, then why not accept that it's also in the field of trees, of plants, of all animals, and human beings? And so when we have imagination, where is it? Is it located in our brain somewhere, or located in our big toe? Or is it more like we're inside of the field of these imaginal cells, so that every time we go through a change, we have the opportunity to open up and download them as a program, really, for the next octave of who it is we're becoming. And that's what shamans knew as well, the indigenous ones of the ancient cultures, was how to travel into these other realms that are outside of our physical form.
So would you say then that, if I understood correctly, that actually our ability to use the imaginal field or our imaginal selves is really the shamanic process in our lives? And that's
yes.
How we create shift.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. That was really an excellent explanation. And I'd like to get actually to kind of the big dog in the room, in one sense, is that the book is called Soul Whispering. So I would like to ask each of you is like, what is the soul? You know, and you talk about both soul loss and soul remembered. And how do we lose? How do we remember? And how do we whisper to it?
Okay, well, I'll jump in. You ask, what is the soul? I think that's a really potent question, one that is contemplated by philosophers and religious and mystical leaders and neuroscientists and all around. For me, and what we're talking about in the book, it's that part of us that's enduring. It's our essence. It's the aspect of ourselves. Not a part. It's the aspect. It's the soul body. The aspect of us that is not governed by the way we were raised, the influences of our culture, the influences of our parents, and so forth. It's who we are, and whether you adhere to beliefs around reincarnation or not, just allow that it is enduring, everlasting, the soul. And so it's interesting that, yes, we do talk about soul loss, and that's certainly talked about in shamanic world. It's really more metaphorical in that sense of soul loss occurs when we experience trauma, and a part of us, a part of that aspect of us, sort of moves aside in a sense to keep safe when we have to begin to learn coping strategies from those wounds, those coping mechanisms to survive in our families and in society. And our psyche, if you like, gets a bit fragmented, although our soul is always whole. It's always there. It may just not be operating in conjunction with our personality. That's the loss. We lose part of our essence, and now it's like we're walking around with a little sort of 2D instead of 3D or 4D or 5D, which, being multidimensional creatures as we are, we're walking around with these wounds that are unhealed, they're unrecognized, yet our soul is whole. It's kind of waiting there. And one of the things that shamans do is they journey for people. When someone is physically or mentally ill in the community, the shaman or the medicine person would be called in, perhaps, and do ceremony and ritual. And one of the things they will do is to do some things to work with going in the field and meeting up with that soul aspect that is keeping itself safe and is not working with the personality, and coax it back so we can become whole. And one of the things that Starwolf and I really believe very deeply is that we can do that for ourselves. We can journey for ourselves and reconnect with lost parts. And in really more kind of ordinary language terms, I would say that you have trauma, and there's a place of dissociation. That's the term that's used in psychology, that we dissociate when there's trauma. And it leaves us wounded and unable to be whole and functioning human beings in the way we want to, that can live our brilliance. And so we can coax those parts back and go back and say to the five-year-old that is in that ethereal body, come back. I need your energy. I need your childlike qualities. I need whatever it is that you lost, that brilliance, that trust in yourself, that fun-loving, that excitement, the ability to cry and the ability to laugh and all that. Come back and come back, and I'll take care of you. I will reparent you. I will love you, that part of me that was lost. And it takes a bit of, you know, takes a bit of work, and sometimes we can't do it on our own. So soul whispering can also be about what someone like Starwolf or I do for other people. We be with them, we talk to them, we encourage them to recognize that they have wounds, and in order to transform and be whole and be the creative, exciting person they really want to be, they're going to have to look at that and heal that bit of pain. But it doesn't stop there. It really isn't just, oh, now you've got to heal some childhood trauma. It's really about becoming whole and fluid, if you like. Mm. And sometimes we can do it for ourselves, but sometimes we need other people to soul whisper to us. Mm. So speaking not to our ego, but to our essence.
Starwolf, did you want to add to that, or were...
I would like to add to that for just one moment, and I really agree with everything that Nita said. Obviously, that's why we wrote the book together, because we are in this congruence with one another. But for me personally, having been therapists, and both of us have been psychotherapists for about 100 years each, you know, we both wanted to find better and better methods instead of just giving people a diagnosis of depressed, anxious, you know, aberrant behavior, dissociative, whatever it might be, to know that those are just words that somebody made up to describe places where we have soul loss. As Nita said, where we no longer have access to certain parts of ourselves, and we don't even know what we lost. And so a good psychotherapist is really a good soul whisperer who's listening to the person and helping that person remember and pull those parts back instead of just automatically saying, well, okay, you need medication. And I'm not anti-medication at all for anyone who needs it, but I believe that it's way, way overused, and probably one in a thousand needs it instead of, you know, everybody that walks through the door. So the other piece to that is that both of us, having been therapists for a long time and doing our own inner healing and then seeking to bring more and more of what we were learning that was working in our searches for ourselves, bringing that back to the people that we worked with, not just individuals, but both of us have worked together and separately with large groups of people and done tons of workshops over the years with people and trainings and healing transformational programs. But as we've done that, you know, the soul whisperer for me has become more of what I would describe as my inner shaman. And the inner shaman is that part of me that recognizes what Nita was saying, is that, you know, there's parts of me that feels like I've lost parts of myself, and I go and search and journey to reclaim them. Now, there's one way of doing the more traditional method that's popular amongst many shamanic teachers these days, and that is what they've learned from indigenous elders, is to frequently, like she said, it's kind of like almost like a shamanic psychotherapist, to journey for someone and to do for that person what they can don't seem to be able to do for themselves. And that works pretty well, and it's pretty popular. But for me, what I've been doing, quite frankly, for the last 30 years, is breath work. And that has become, you spoke about ceremony earlier, and I wanted to go back to that. For me, the breath work has become the most powerful and potent shamanic tool that I possess personally for my own ongoing renewal and transformation. Because, you know, new soul losses happen too when you, you know, live with someone for 2 or 3 years who's going through cancer and death, and you're being a caretaker and loving and supporting. Soul loss occurs there. It's not preventable. And yet at the same time, there comes that time when you can redirect that attention to oneself, and you don't even notice what parts you need to bring back until you make that journey and go into that ceremony along the way. So with this understanding that we can do ceremony for ourselves as well as have co-journeyers with us is very important. And the shamanic breath work, this is the last piece I'll say about this, the shamanic breath work is a process that I birthed 21 years ago, and Nita was very much a big part of that birthing process. And it's a method that we've both used. Nita's used it to breathe, to do breath work with many clinicians and doctors and people all over the planet. And I myself have trained literally hundreds and thousands of people to do shamanic breath work over the last 21 years. And it's an ongoing process that I use for myself. So that in itself allows the person to learn how to be their own shamanic journeyer, and it's very empowering. And since you're an astrologer, I'll just say that it really speaks to the shift we're in as the Aquarian age, which is really knowing that great mystery, great spirit, the soul, the shaman is within.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. And you don't have to feel compelled that that's going to be your last mention of breath work in this conversation. You know, it's kind of like that old Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid thing. There's rules and a knife. So there's no rules here. You know, we bring it all out. But, you know, it's an interesting thing for me, because you talk about synchronicity in the book, and both of you talk about your journeys, what led you to shamanic practices. And I'm saying that for the listeners, because and an important point that you bring out, I believe an important point, is that, you know, all of our journeys are, it's not a linear journey. Spirituality is, there's nothing linear about it. And all of us reach places through our journey, whatever that is. It's not like going through school where you advance to the next grade. It's how things approach us. But in the last month or so, I was doing a lot of work, inner child work, based on John Bradshaw's teachings and work. And what I felt with the soul whispering is that this is really like the metaphysical version of doing that same inner child work. But it was what I felt was very powerful about this is that you were giving not necessarily a path of identification as much as a path of, like you said, reclamation and healing going forward, and allowing each of us to seek the path using the tools in here that best heals us, that best helps us reclaim. And I felt that there was a real synchronicity between what I was doing with the inner child work and what you were sharing in Soul Whispering.
Well, that's really well said. And it touches on one of the things that we wanted to get across in the book, and it sounds like we did, you got it, is that it's a step, that the inner child work, the healing, is a step. It's not the end product necessarily. It's a step that I've seen our culture drop into over the last 20 years. And John Bradshaw is one of the absolute leaders in this, having us look at that inner child work. And yeah, it is kind of the metaphysical version of that. And then, you know, the next octave, as Star Wolf has often said, the next octave of healing is transformation. That's when you're just kind of going a little further than just healing your wounds, right?
Well, both of you being teachers and leaders and guides would recognize that the thing that we tend to miss, those of us who are teachers, leaders, and guides, is that when Star Wolf, you said that, for instance, you've been teaching the breath work for 30 years, I'm quite sure that it's evolved over that 30 years. So it's not what you started with 30 years ago.
Right.
And the rest of us, I think the damage of pharmacopoeia in our society is that we tend to think we take a pill and we're healed, instead of what you just shared, Nita, is that it's a journey. Yeah. It's all
it's
about
a journey.
The journey. And you share your journeys in here, which I think is also powerful for the readers to get. You know, you mentioned, you also mentioned that the journey of our life is to step into consciousness and sacred purpose. And in some of my conversations with people, it seems like many, many people get very tied up of what is my purpose? So how would you like people using Soul Whispering to work into, just journey into their consciousness and sacred purpose in life? And if we need to go to the next question.
Go ahead, Dunbar, jump in.
I wasn't sure if you were asking, you know, how, like, meaning the method, or could you clarify that question just a little bit more? Because it sounds... Were you asking for the method to go in to find that, or
no? If I have to work harder, I don't know that I could do that. But
right,
that's kind of demanding, don't you think? But no, what I was really getting to is that from an esoteric standpoint, that has one meaning. But now, how do we pull that down and say, what is my journey into consciousness? How should I expect it to be? And how do I use that to find my soul purpose, my sacred purpose?
Okay. Well, that's a very good question. And that's really what I focus on now. I wrote a book a few years ago called Visionary Shamanism. And then I started out the book in the beginning, and Nita spoke to it just a moment ago, that I started talking, instead of talking about healing, I started talking about transformation. In fact, my organization that's been around for 21 years is Venus Rising Association for Transformation. And so... looking at what does it mean to heal and what does it mean to transform. And so often I think healing implies that we're wounded. And in fact, one of the ways to look, one of the definitions of being a shaman is a wounded healer. But, you know, if you're wounded, you would hope at some point you heal. And if you heal, you know, you don't want to just go around saying, I'm a wounded shaman, I'm a wounded healer, I'm a wounded healer. Well, you know, that helps people to identify with you that, oh, yes, okay, you have wounds too, and that, you know, I might stump my toe tomorrow and get a new wound. But it does mean that I have a certain sense of mastery in learning how to transform my wounds into healing. And so moving to the next octave of healing, which is focused on in the mental health world, in the psychotherapy world, in the addictions world, to another octave of transformation is something that we've been developing for a long time. And, you know, Nita and I have both worked extensively in the field of addictions. And I think that's a beautiful place to really see how we can understand that things travel in, you know, this, it's not a linear path. It's not even a circular path. If it's a circular path and you're still doing the same thing you were doing yesterday and coming back to it, then that's called addiction. But there's another path, and we've written about it in that book, and that in this book and other books, and that is the spiral path. And that with the spiral path, you may feel like that you're coming back around to the same wound or the same place, but it's usually with a completely different event or a new thing in your life. And every time we change or move, we go through a symbolic death and rebirth. And so we're actually like an orbiting around the planet, you know, orbiting around the sun. But each time it's a little bit different journey, even though we can recognize the, you know, the steps on the path, so to speak. So if we can take that on as an overlay in our psyche and our consciousness as a model for change, we call it the alchemical map of shamanic transformation, the spiral path. If we can kind of replace that old linear model, and thinking that we've always got to be on top of our game and allow ourselves to go through, as you said, hey, here I am again doing some inner child work, you know. But I guarantee you, if you're doing inner child work, even if you did it 30 years ago, it's a different octave than you're doing it today. You're making a new orbit. So we're always, you know, evergreen. We're always orbiting around things and learning new things from the past because it's not a linear path. But we're also downloading our futures. So while the past, we might go back in and heal something, the future is about transformation, where we completely, we don't even look like a caterpillar anymore, you know? We barely even remember what it felt like to be a caterpillar. We're busy flying around instead of eating plants now. We're busy flying around taking the nectar and pollinating and giving something back.
Yeah, that's what I really liked about that, Star Wolf, also was the explanation that I think is potent for all of us to grasp, is that we do come back around to issues, and we come back around to them based on different triggers and different ways, because we've cleared a layer, but maybe we really haven't cleared it all out. Or maybe there's just residual. It may not even be deeper, but we do come back around till we really resolve those issues.
Mm-hmm. It's really an important point. It really is an important point. I'm glad you're emphasizing that, because often people feel like they've failed. You know, I hear it all the time. Oh, my God, I can't believe I'm still dealing with these issues. Well, you know, yes, until you die, probably, and beyond.
And then,
that was
what being human, fully embodying, is about. This is what it's about. You know, you can't just brush your teeth once and then say, well, why do I have to brush them again? It's a mundane metaphor, but it's true that it's both a journey and it's a practice. And so, in other words, it's a journey. If it was just a journey and you got in the car and you're driving on it, it'd be a little more automatic. We're not on automatic. We are not on automatic as human beings. We have to do some conscious choices to work that path, to treat it as a daily practice with ceremony and ritual and all the things we've already been talking about. So it's both a journey and a practice.
You know, and I don't recall, Nita, if it was in the part of the book where you talked about your depression and the codependence and the narcissistic altruism and stuff like that. But there's somewhere in the book that I came across, and I didn't want to highlight it. I was using paper clips, and I was flipping through my paper clips and couldn't find it.
Okay.
But there was a part that I felt that came out in the book that I also think we miss, and it's only by working on things that you start getting it. And that is that, unfortunately, very often we have to experience a trauma to do the healing work, because if things are going along fine, we don't do the work.
Yeah, it's true. If I know what you're talking about, it's that if you get to it, it's what's nice is you can get to a place in life where you preempt it. But for most of us and for most of our lives, that's why crises happen. I think often, you know, you'll be going along, you're not very happy in your job, but you stay there for security, and then you get fired. You get fired, and that precipitates the healing journey, which, if it goes well, will turn into a transformation. So, yeah, it often takes a crisis. And, you know, we like to talk about that. The Chinese word for crisis has two characters, and one is danger and one is opportunity combined. And that's the shamanic way, if you like, is to take each thing that happens and look, do some meaning making with it. You know, what does this mean? It's not just that I'm a victim of my circumstances, but what does it mean? What does it say about me? And then to take, you know, to really look at that we go through these cycles of change, you know, that we write about in the book. Star Wars developed this model called the 5 cycles of change. And so there's all, you know, in some ways there's a predictable trajectory that also involves chaos. there's a piece of that. But change is part of being human. And often what precipitates change is a big crisis, disastrous event. That the thing is, when you start living shamanically, and by that I mean you start living really consciously, awakening the shaman within really means that instead of hanging on to that job that you know is soul deadening, that you do the work, and it's not easy. It's not easy. It may still feel like a crisis to walk away from a job. But, you know, that's some of the stories that Starwolf and I have told and other people in the book have told of walking away from jobs, walking away from relationships, you know, couch surfing for a while, finding yourself having to do things, you know, be on welfare and facing some shame. Whatever it is, you can do that, or you can wait for the tsunami to hit you. It's going to happen.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's something that, unfortunately, we don't recognize. Man, most of us don't recognize early in our life. We have to.
No, definitely not early in our life. And also, we don't. And God bless us. It's a learning process. And unfortunately, a lot of what goes on, not always, but a lot of what goes on in the name of medicine and even therapy, is you have an issue, fix it, fix the issue, and move forward. And if you that issue comes up again, well, you know, what'd you do wrong?
Yeah, that's right. And what's wrong with me? It's not only what's wrong with me. It worked for Bob. Why doesn't it work
exactly.
for me? You know.
You know, unfortunately, we have a shame-based culture that likes to shame us into getting it right and trying to walk the straight and narrow and the linear path. And I think it's the most destructive thing. If people said to me, what is the most destructive thing in our culture? And I would say the belief that we have to get it right and walk a straight path, walk a linear path. Nothing in nature is linear. And, you know, I use this metaphor a lot, and that is that, you know, I live here in the mountains, and I'm looking out the window. There's millions of trees in these mountains. And about 90% of them lose every one of their leaves in the winter. And none of them go to therapy over it. None of them say, you know, like, what did I do wrong? I was looking good. I was fluffed out. You know, I had fruit. I had seeds. I had big branches. I had a trillion leaves, you know, and they even turned pretty colors for a while. And now I'm standing here bare, blank, naked in the wind, and everybody to see me, and I guess I screwed up, and I need to go to therapy, you know. But they're smarter than us. You know, these mountains here where I live are the oldest mountains on the continent, on this continent, and the eighth oldest mountain range in the world. And in the indigenous world, they believe that the mountains hold the bones of the ancestors of everything that's ever been. The tops of the mountains where I live are 1.7 billion years old. So they've seen it all. They've experienced it all. And they don't believe in a linear path either. They know that it's okay to make changes, you know, and as Nita has spoken about. So if we can move away from this shame-based culture, Nita and I jokingly talked about, and I think we should do it actually, we talked about creating the shamanic DSM, you know, which is a diagnostic, you know, manual. And,
yeah, it's our next book.
And yeah, instead of calling it crisis, we would call it a shamanic initiation. It was your time, it was your turn to lose your leaves or to climb into a cocoon and dissolve. It was your calling, being called by your future self. Your future self, which lives in your imaginal cell, said, hey, you, brother, come on in. Time to fall apart. Time to revisit something at a different octave because there's bigger fish to fry. There's more things for you to do on this planet than what you've been doing and or be. You know, and that the last piece I want to say about that is that the sacred purpose part of it can be growing a garden. The sacred purpose can be being happier. The sacred purpose can find the cure for cancer. But ultimately, I believe that that sacred purpose is really finding ourselves and listening to that soul whisper that we speak about, that inner self. And then whatever it is that we're supposed to be or whatever it is that we're supposed to do, when it comes our turn to drop the leaves or to grow the leaves or anything else in between, we'll know what's ours to do and what our soul purpose is.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're bringing that piece up because I think another mistake that happens is that people, when they're looking for their sacred purpose, it's as though it has to be something that's big and dramatic and magical. Yeah. And sacred purpose is about learning to be sacred in the everyday life, whatever it is. That's the sacred purpose, is being human and being the spiritual beings in a human body that we are. And you might be a janitor and a gardener or the president of the United States or a ballerina or a shamanic teacher. But the sacred is yourself, your day-to-day, being present with it. The ever-new, the mystery.
Well, I think that's a good point for us to really kind of wrap up that portion of the interview, because that's a powerful, powerful position for everybody to take in their life, to be the best expression of who they are, the best light, the most sacred being that they can be. And so, Starwolf, what's next? Excuse me. What events or other information would you like to let the listeners know are going to be happening, or where would you like to direct them next?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is probably the best thing for people to do is either follow me on Facebook under Linda Starwolf, or to go, because I could post all my events there daily. They're being posted by our public relations people. And also to shamanicbreathwork.org, which is the website. And they'll see a long list of events. So I'm not going to mention all of them, but I'm going to mention two or three, if I could. The first one I want to mention, even though there's about five events or seven events before then, the first one I want to mention is that I will be at a mega institute teaching soulful recovery with breathwork, shamanism, and actual recovery from addictions in October. And it's on my website. I don't remember the exact dates, but that's one I'd really like for people to know about. New York is beautiful in October. The second one I'd like to mention is that Nita and I are creating a soul whispering series out in the Bay Area. And that we have that'll be posted very soon for people who would like to experience the two of us together. And we love teaching together. So that will be happening in March of next year. And again, the dates are listed for that and the location is to be announced. And then the last thing I'd like to mention is that I take people on shamanic journeys to sacred sites around the world, and that all of our trips this year are filled but we're going to Peru next October in 2018. So if people would like to make a journey and do shamanic breath work in Peru, it's happening next October, and you can find all that on my website.
Go ahead, and Nita.
I would just add, you can find me on the shamanicbreathwork.org website as well. You can email me there at nita@shamanicbreathwork.org. And the only other thing I do in my life besides this teachings that I do with Star Wolf is that, as you mentioned, I'm a Hoffman teacher, and that those are week-long transformative processes that you can find at www.hoffmaninstitute.org. And I do that about once a month.
I'd like to thank you both, not only for the work that you're doing in the book, but for your time today. It was truly enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And I want to let listeners know that there are whispering audio tracks that come with the book. There's a download available. So if they purchase the book, they can get it at Amazon. They can get it at Inner Traditions. They could get it at bookstores everywhere. But they really should explore it to find out if they have anything they're looking to resolve, heal, or progress on in their life. Then I really believe you've given us a tool that can become our carry-all to say, what do we do next and how can we best work on ourselves? So I want to thank you both for your time and your energy and the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vlad. It's been a wonderful interview.
Yeah. So please hold
really
on a second. Thank you. Hold on one second, please. As we close up, I want to remind the listeners that Good Vibrations Radio will be back next week with Kirilani and her Go With The Flow as she shares the vibrational energy for the month of August. August being the month of self-love. It's a time for us to really examine where we want to heal, and it all starts tomorrow. So make sure, and it's even brought out in this book, although we didn't talk about it, make sure that you're taking care of yourself before you give everything away to everyone else. Because at the end of the day, if you've taken good care of yourself, you'll have more to share with others around you in your life. So I want to thank you for listening. And as a reminder, remember to turn the lead in your life into gold. Many blessings for you on your continued journey. Namaste.